You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you. With professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's Vincent here. I just wanted to give you guys a quick program note. We got a bunch of bonus content coming out from our trip to CooperCon. We're going to be wheeling that out. So this is some interviews with some of the keynote speakers at CooperCon that Joe and I conducted while we were up in Vancouver attending this. So I hope you enjoy it. And we'll be back with even more Cooper-related content, plus a brand new regular episode.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Calderoni. This is The Shocking Details.
Yeah, okay.
All right. Hey, all right. What's happening, everybody? It's Vincent, and I am here with Joe, and we are at...
Hello, the CooperCon in downtown Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah, we're at the Kiggins Theater. Hearing a lot of different presentations about D.B. Cooper and getting into the minutiae of this.
Really the minutiae. I mean, we're talking about like electron microscopy, for Christ's sakes. I mean, somebody who sat across from him 50 years ago in the airplane, he spoke for a while. And
actually, I thought that guy was pretty entertaining.
No, he was pretty good. It was, he was less bad than some of the other ones. So it's been an up and down experience. Some good, some very informative, some not quite so much, some a little. But that's the world of Cooper. I mean, both of us have been immersed in Cooperology, I would say, for a number of years now. Not as deep as some of these people here.
I've learned more about the flowcharts of the Lewis and Washougal Rivers than any person who isn't a hydrologist ought to know, trying to figure this stuff out.
Absolutely, yeah. And I've learned all about the 727. I took it upon myself to learn everything I could about the functioning of that airplane, especially the air stairs in the back. And I think I'm qualified to say that outside of the Boeing company, I know more about the air stairs than any living human being.
Oh, man, you should be presenting, Joe.
What's that?
You should be presenting.
I know, I probably should, but they didn't invite me to do so. But I didn't say anything, so I guess it serves me right. I'm not sure I want to be up there. That's a tough crowd.
Well, that's a tough crowd. I think people here have some strong opinions.
Yeah, they really do. Although I think that the one guy, it was Mark Meltzer, who's a longtime Cooperologist, put it quite well. He said that there's a huge contrast between people here in person at some of these meetups and on the Drop Zone and the Cooper website and stuff like that, where people are just flaming douchebags. And whereas in real life, people are all really pleasant and polite.
Yeah, right.
Go figure.
I go to some of those websites sometimes and I do not post because I know that you can ask a simple, basic question.
Uh-huh.
It just gets flamed.
I know. It's exactly. So that's why I stay off those things, too. And I would be really reluctant to get up there and give a talk. I mean, I have many opinions about Cooper and, possibilities for routes of investigation and whether he faked his bailout, which I think he might have done. But I know that at least half the people in the room are going to hate me when I get up there and present that stuff. They're going to tell that. So I don't know.
That's how it'd be. I mean, you could tell I won't rat out who it was, but we were talking to someone who presented and I could tell that individual was quite nervous about their upcoming moment on stage.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she did. Okay. She was articulate. I'm not we're not naming names, of course. I'm not sure that I don't buy it at all, frankly.
No.
Yeah. And there was another presenter was going on about the connection between D.B. Cooper and Operation Gladio, which some of you may or may not have heard of. But we'll maybe even talk about Gladio one of these days. It's a fascinating
topic. But it is. It's also one of those things that kind of becomes like a boogeyman. You know, like it's like MK Ultra. You know, it always comes up. You only have to spend so much time before that one becomes really relevant.
Yeah, Gladio. And interestingly, that there was another program just exactly like it that I happened to find on the FBI's website, and which we can discuss. I won't. You know. Tell you what it was called right now or anything like that, but yeah, there was another Gladio.
Interesting. All right, we should probably get back in there.
Yeah, it's time to sign off just for the moment.
All right, we'll see you in there.
So if you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself for me.
Hi, I'm Tom Kay. I'm a scientist with the Foundation for Scientific Advancement. I normally work in the fields of paleontology and astrophysics, but on the side I've been sucked into the Cooper vortex, where I've done some analytical work on the evidence surrounding the Cooper case.
Excellent. What theory and or suspect would you most closely associate yourself with?
Well, everyone in the Cooper vortex has a suspect except me. So what I do is I analyze the evidence, and the results of that analysis limit who the suspects can be. For instance, we did an analysis on the tie that showed there was titanium on the tie, and this is metallic titanium, pure titanium. And that limits Cooper to someone who lives in a world that uses titanium. So he went from anyone in the country who was 45 years old or so to a very small group of a few thousand people at most.
Sure. And can you tell us, I was really interested in your talk about diatoms. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Our most recent work on the Cooper projects have been looking at the money that was found on Tina Bar. And it is as big a mystery as who Cooper is, and probably a completely separate story. Mm-hmm. What we did is we looked very carefully at the money that found on Tina Bar, and we looked at it under an electron microscope. And that allowed us to see this form of algae that's called diatom. Now, algae is usually slimy, but diatoms grow a glass shell around their cells. And the glass shell lives on after the cell dies. There are thousands of species of these diatoms, and they all have different shapes. You can tell the species by the shape. And the particular shapes we found on the Cooper bills were of a particular species called Aspionella formosa that only lives in the Columbia River in the springtime, not in November when Cooper jumped. So this research has effectively displaced the burial of the money on Tina Bar away from the Cooper jump.
Interesting. Really fascinating. Hey, guys, keep it down. We're recording a podcast here. So my last question for you is, if people are more interested, in hearing more about your work and your research, where would they go to find that?
So if people are interested in hearing about the research that we've done on the Cooper Project, we have a website called citizensleuths.com where you can see all of this. And there's quite a bit. We've done work on the rivers. We've done work on the money, on the flight path, and it's all over there.
All right. Now, so Tom, anyway, I first met you virtually through the Citizen Sleuths website. And of course, you were recruited by Larry Carr of the FBI, and you're a major star in Jeffrey Gray's book Skyjack. You're big time in that, so you're a star. Yeah, you appeared in a documentary, a couple of documentaries about this case, I believe,
yeah.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been 10 years of documentary. We're on TV every year for Cooper.
I know, it's fantastic. It's cool. Well, anyway, congratulations on your stardom.
Thank you.
I know, but I got a couple of questions for you. It's on your website. Regarding the reserve parachute and the parachute cord that he took from it, what you say on the website is that you look through the FBI records, you found one place where they state that he took two pieces of parachute cord from that reserve chute, which is also, by the way, what you see on the Wikipedia page about Cooper. Then you guys state that in another report, also by the FBI, you found that they said that he took three pieces. And then you guys went and pulled the chute itself out of the evidence locker and looked at it, and you found five pieces were gone. So is that all true? And my major question is, were any of those five pieces potentially, maybe, possibly just taken by somebody at the FBI for a souvenir, or because they were going camping for the weekend and they needed a piece of cord?
So yes, that is one of these. That is yet another Cooper mystery.
There's so many of these things, right?
They're just never ending. Yeah. And we were quite surprised because we heard that there was a couple of cords that had been taken out, which would make sense. That's about all you'd need to tie the bag up and tie it to your body. Carol Abrazinskas did that work, and she was very curious about the. I would have never counted the cords. Carol thought to count the cords.
Right. Yeah.
And she was the one that found out that there's way too many missing here. What the heck happened to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That being said, did they walk out the back door as a souvenir? Certainly, possibly that could have been the case. Although,
pretty lame souvenir.
Who knows, but I guess, there's also questions about the money shards being taken home as souvenirs, too.
So, that's true.
I don't know where. I would like to think that the FBI's people are very above board and that wouldn't happen. But we still have the case of the missing shroud lines. So that's another one. That's just part of the long list of Cooper mysteries and enigmas that is pretty hard to answer.
Yeah, that's the problem with this case is nailing stuff down. One of the things I noticed that just because I'm in a retentive and you wind up spitballing with when you're doing Cooper is I looked at the three. There's essentially two. They're in two groups. The first, there's two that are taken from stations 11 and 12, and they're cut at about the same length. And then there's three more from stations 7, 15, and 22. And those are cut in ascending lengths, starting with 7, and then 15, and then 22, which could be accounted for by, of course, just sheer randomness. Or maybe it's an encrypted message, or who knows. But has anybody ever mentioned that to you or noticed that or anything?
No, we never noticed
that. Nobody's as weird as me then. Yeah, okay.
Well, there's even weirder things. That's not weird compared to some other things about the S. So the container that was left, the reserve container, he opened up the one reserve container, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
he
cut the parachute out of it.
Yeah.
Now, what's really weird about that is that he just didn't cut the lines.
No, I know.
He slit the knots.
Yeah, and left the, they call it the yoke, right? That's the piece that's stitched
into
the
band in the middle,
container.
And everything's tied to that. He cut each individual knot.
Yeah, I know.
Which was very strange
that
to me.
Is, I still don't have a theory for that. I've worked out a theory for practically everything else regarding D.B. Cooper. That one is...
Well, that's good because nobody's working on that parachute, right? So if you want to work on that parachute, that's a good one to start on, right?
Yeah, I know. It is a really strange one. Maybe he had hopes of using that container. Some people said that he was hoping to use the container to hold the money, perhaps.
It's not that big,
It's not.
And it's kind of
it's the same size as the one that Eric Ulis has downstairs,
roughly,
correct?
Yeah, roughly. Maybe even a little smaller, if I remember it correctly.
Yeah.
So certainly not something you'd pack a bunch of money into.
No.
But he spent a lot of time to cut the knots and then didn't use it.
Yeah.
You'd think he'd use it for at least some of the money.
I guess so. That is inexplicable. Maybe D.B. Cooper was OCD. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hell if I know.
Who knows?
If he was OCD, he would have taken those cigarette butts with him.
Well, I think he was thinking fingerprints, right, which would be found on paper or cups or things like that. He didn't think about fingerprints being found on cigarette butts. I think he was smart enough to think he knew better, right? Yeah. Everything I see from this whole case says he was a guy that was kind of smart and kind of figured it out and thought he had it all worked out, but there was edges where he didn't have the knowledge, and that's where it leaked through.
Well, I was going to say on the money find, I think that Cooper left the money there. That is my theory. And he did it to tweak us.
Left the money where? On the Tina Bar?
On Tina Bar.
So he got it wet first and then buried it.
Well, I was wondering about that. What I thought he might have done is that I spent a lot of time on the river, and the river is actually quite a bit affected by tides and the level of it is. And supposing he came along at night to put the money there. And so he, beaches his boat, comes ashore, buries it he digs a little shallow hole a few feet above waterline, drops the bills in there, stacks them up basically. Maybe kicks a little sand over, maybe not, because he wants
7 feet above the waterline.
Yeah, he wants the money to be found. Well, it depends. The river in this, the Columbia.
No, 7 feet above the waterline. We looked at that.
Of the permanent waterline?
Yeah,
really?
The average waterline,
Really? Okay.
Yeah. It was only twice that it was up, the water level came up over.
Okay. Oh, that place? Okay. Yeah, okay. All right.
flood stage.
Okay, well, that shoots that theory all to hell then.
So that's what happens in the Cooper Vortex, right?
Yeah.
You spin the fan.
That's good then. That does. I still think I can't conceive of any other person putting that money.
Let's go with
there.
It. Let's say he went in and he buried the money just a little bit above. Let's keep going with that theory.
Yeah. He buried it. He buries it up there. Why is it soaked in Columbia River water? That's a good one. I don't know.
It has to be in the open water. It can't be soaked underneath the sand.
Yeah, I know. And yeah. So
he'd have to like fall off the boat and then swim to shore with the money.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
To be some goofy story like that, you know, where I went overboard.
Yeah. Now, how long in your guesstimation would it have taken in, as far as that money being immersed before? So let's say he does hold
it. More than a few minutes, less than 15.
Oh, okay. And then he buries it and it's all, okay. All right.
It takes at least, you know, when you have dry bills, it takes at least, you know, minutes to soak them. We have the analysis on our website. We did the analysis.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, huh? Yeah, as far as that goes, he could have easily immersed the money before he buried it, but God knows why the hell he would do that.
He certainly wouldn't do that on purpose. You know?
Nah, I can't think of a good reason for that.
That's really the problem with the Cooper Vortex here. Right?
Friggin' Cooper, I tell you. Let me think. Oh, I know. He identified as a raccoon. As you know, raccoons like to dip their food in water before they eat it.
You know what? That's as plausible as anything else I've heard, right? Yeah.
All right, let's go
with
that. He
had raccoon affinities. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'll call him Raccoon Cooper. Okay, right on. Okay.
So my question for you is, what is your name?
My name is Marty Andrade.
And what is your connection to the story of D.B. Cooper?
So I actually wrote a book on D.B. Cooper a few years ago called D.B. Cooper, Chasing the Last Lead. And I've just been kind of involved ever since.
Excellent. And what is your predominant theory and or suspect about D.B. Cooper?
So this one's kind of tough. We actually, now that we have the FBI files being released every few months, we have suspects that we've never heard of before. One of them, his name has been redacted, so he might still be alive. We call him the Egg Harbor suspect because he was living in Egg Harbor in 2004 when the FBI did their kind of last-ditch analysis where they were going to try to steal a DNA sample from him. So it was a serious attempt to solve the case in 2004. There were two other suspects involved there. One was Richard McCoy. The other one was called the Shelton lead. But the one I focus on the most is the Egg Harbor suspect because he's right there. Egg Harbor is next to Atlantic City, where you could launder money in the casinos.
Okay. And if people wanted to find out more about your writing or your book, where would they go to do that?
Oh, you have to spell my name right. So it's Andrade. The book is available on Amazon.com. My website is martinandrade.wordpress.com. I don't update it a lot, but a Google search will get you to me.
Fantastic.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'd person if you were sure that Cooper was brown-eyed. And they did. They actively pursued Sheridan Peterson to get a DNA swap.
That's really awesome. That's really fascinating.
His eyes were as blue can get, but they still considered him a person of interest. But I think it's probably the real truth is probably all of these people that we focused on, that, you know, the Cooper aficionados are focused on, it's probably not any of them. It's probably someone else.
It's really interesting. So if people wanted to find out more about your work, where would they go?
Look on D.B. Cooper Forum. You can Google D.B. Cooper Forum. You can find a lot of posts there. And also dropzone.com. If you look, I haven't posted there in quite a while, but back years ago, I was a frequent poster there. I don't post anything really profound, just, you know, my thoughts, my observations. I have jumped out of a jet airliner, out of a DC-9, so I do know what that experience is like. I'm also a lawyer, which I think brings some useful experience to the case, because I do not think D.B. Cooper could be successfully prosecuted today, even if he can, well, not if he confessed, but, I mean, if they picked him up and had all sorts of evidence. The fact that the FBI deliberately destroyed the cigarette butts, I think, is a grounds for a motion to dismiss the case based on failure to preserve possibly exculpatory evidence.
That's fascinating. Hey, can I ask you one final favor? Can you reintroduce yourself and tell me a little about your skydiving history one more time? Because
I'm worried that we got a little hot on the levels, and I just want to make sure we're safe so everyone knows who you are.
Hi, I'm Mark Meltzer. I'm 72 years old. I've been a skydiver since 1968. I'm still jumping and jumped a couple of weeks ago. I have a strong interest in the D.B. Cooper case just because I love aviation, and this, to me, is the most intriguing aviation mystery of all time. I mean, a lot of people would say it's the Amelia Earhart case, but if you discount all the wild theories about her being kidnapped by the Japanese, and I do discount those, the only real question is, where is the wreckage of her plane? That's the only question that remains. In D.B. Cooper case, it's far more interesting. There's so many unanswered questions. Who was he? What was the motive? What happened to him before and after the jump? I mean, there's just so many unanswered questions, and a huge amount of investigative effort has been put into answering those questions, and it doesn't lead us anywhere. After years and years, the FBI had hundreds of agents working on the case, and they really didn't come up with much useful evidence.
Awesome. I couldn't have said that better myself. Thank you.
Sure. And they did. They actively pursued Sheridan Peterson to get a DNA swap.
That's really awesome. That's really fascinating.
His eyes were as blue can get, but they still considered him a person of interest. But I think it's probably the real truth is probably all of these people that we focused on, that, you know, the Cooper aficionados have focused on, it's probably not any of them. It's probably someone else.
It's really interesting. So if people wanted to find out more about your work, where would they go?
Look on DB Cooper Forum. You can Google DB Cooper Forum. You can find a lot of posts there. And also dropzone.com. If you look, I haven't posted there in quite a while, but back years ago, I was a frequent poster there. I don't post anything really profound, just, you know, my thoughts, my observations. I have jumped out of a jet airliner, out of a DC-9, so I do know what that experience is like. I'm also a lawyer, which I think brings some useful experience to the case, because I do not think D.B. Cooper could be successfully prosecuted today, even if he confessed, but I mean, if they picked him up and had all sorts of evidence. The fact that the FBI deliberately destroyed the cigarette butts, I think, is a grounds for a motion to dismiss the case based on failure to preserve possibly exculpatory evidence.
That's fascinating. Hey, can I ask you one final favor? Can you reintroduce yourself and tell me a little about your skydiving history one more time? Because I'm worried that we got a little hot on the levels, and I just want to make sure we're safe so everyone knows who you are.
Hi, I'm Mark Meltzer. I'm 72 years old. I've been a skydiver since 1968. I'm still jumping. I jumped a couple of weeks ago. I have a strong interest in the D.B. Cooper case just because I love aviation, and this, to me, is the most intriguing aviation mystery of all time. I mean, a lot of people would say it's the Amelia Earhart case, but if you discount all the wild theories about her being kidnapped by the Japanese, and I do discount those, the only real question is, where is the wreckage of her plane? That's the only question that remains. In D.B. Cooper case, it's far more interesting. There's so many unanswered questions. Who was he? What was the motive? What happened to him before and after the jump? I mean, there's just so many unanswered questions, and a huge amount of investigative effort has been put into answering those questions, and it doesn't lead us anywhere. After years and years, the FBI had hundreds of agents working on the case, and they really didn't come up with much useful evidence.
Awesome. I couldn't have said that better myself. Thank you.
Sure.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. So, hey, I just got a couple questions for you. Can you say your name and how you're connected to the D.B. Cooper case?
Sure. My name is Bruce Smith. I'm an investigative journalist, and I'm the author of D.B. Cooper and the FBI, a case study of America's only unsolved skyjacking.
And you've been featured in a lot of D.B. Cooper documentaries and things, haven't you?
I have.
So the other question I've been asking everybody is, which theory and or suspect do you most closely attach yourself to in this case?
The theory that I have is that we're going to solve the case eventually, and when we find out who D.B. Cooper actually is, we're going to say, who's that? And it's going to be a come out of the blue. Yeah. That said, if I had to make a bet right now with my own money on who is D.B. Cooper, I would put my money on a commando. Somebody coming out of special ops, somebody who was trained to do the jump, and was trained to be involved in an episode for 5 hours with other people that he was threatening to kill without losing his own cool, without dropping a bead of sweat. And I think that takes a special kind of person and takes specialized training. And I think those are obvious capacities from Cooper. So now when you talk to guys in special ops, when you talk to commandos, they're absolutely convinced that D.B. Cooper is one of them. One guy told me, he says, look, hey, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. He's one of us. He did it exactly the way I would do it.
That's awesome. So if someone wanted to hear more about your theories, where would they go on those internets?
Well, you can learn about what I know of D.B. Cooper and what I've written in a number of different places. One is you can buy my book from Amazon or Barnes & Noble's. The third edition just came out this week. You can go to my online news magazine called The Mountain News WA. Every mountain range has a mountain news. And yeah, my mountain news is for the Cascades. And so I have the WA. And pretty much everything that's in the book is on the mountain news in some version, some usually a raw version, an initial version. And the book is more of a distillation and a compendium and tying more thoughts together and more information together. I also have a number of YouTube clips up where I discuss different dynamics, such as the citizen sleuths or the DNA, things like that. So at the YouTube channel, just Google Bruce Smith, D.B. Cooper.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Oh, hang on. I was going to plug his book. You got it? Yeah, I just wanted to say, by the way, I've got a copy of your book. Okay. Once again, D.B. Cooper and the FBI.
Correct.
And I have a copy. I've found it very useful. It's a good reference work. And so if you are thinking about getting into Cooperology, and of course you should be thinking about that, you might want to pick up a copy of Bruce's book.
I'd like to comment on that. I think the book, from my perspective, is not only about Cooper, but it's about the FBI.
Yeah.
And two things from that. One is you really can't understand D.B. Cooper in totality unless you really look at the FBI's investigation. What did they do? What didn't they do? What did they do well? What didn't they do well? All those kinds of dynamics and pressures and all of that. And from that, the book really gives you a good feel, I think, about how law enforcement truly functions. And in the era of fake news and of propaganda and everybody spinning stories and things and nobody trusting nobody and all of that, I don't make a judgment. I'm just telling you what evidence got lost, when it got lost, people who weren't interviewed by FBI agents who were principals in the case, like the guy who was actually the air traffic controller when Cooper jumped, you know, seemingly, you know, whose decision was it not to talk to this guy, you know, and penetrating in, I've interviewed over 24 FBI agents that were involved in the case, and you hear what they say and what they don't say. And how they respond to my questions. Usually, mostly, most of them shut up. They clam up. I call it the one and done scenario, that when they're very willing to talk to me because that's their job. Yeah. Be nice to the newspaper guy. Okay. But once I start asking troubling questions, no, they don't want to, we're done. Yeah. Okay. And it's over. And that's the way it goes. Because I think law enforcement use guys like me, journalists, as we work for them.
Yeah.
And what I've learned is that the primary mission of law enforcement is not to fight crime or to catch criminals. The primary mission of law enforcement is to tell good stories on the 11 o'clock news so that everybody gets a good night's sleep. And that's where the spin comes, and that's where the distortion comes from. And if they don't have anything good to say for the 11 o'clock news, it's under investigation. Okay. Or nowadays, when you talk to the feds, it's a question of national security. Okay. And that just shuts everything down. And everybody goes, oh, well, if there's something troubling, you know, I'll hear about it tomorrow. And in the meantime, I'm going to bed. Good night.
Okay. Yeah, for a slightly less cynical take on it, I've concluded that most of these bureaucrats and police and stuff had the motto of, you know, nobody ever lost his job for saying too little. And so that's what they do. That's why they, because I've done the same thing. I've talked to a lot of cops, and usually it's like, oh, go talk to our public information officer, you know, and to get that information. And of course, the PIO won't tell you anything either, but that's just the way it is.
They tell you what they want you to know and when they want you to know it.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, too, especially from the viewpoint of the FBI, is like, number one, you're either a waste of their time completely, or number two, you're going to take some factoids that they give you and you're going to crack the D.B. Cooper case wide open, which would make them look pretty damn stupid. So they don't want to cooperate with that either, do they? I mean, so, yeah.
Digging into the FBI, Hoover, who was still director of the FBI when Cooper stole his airplane, he had, it's my understanding, I got this from an FBI agent, it's my understanding that Cooper gave his agents cash bonuses if they broke a major case. And if they shared the information, if there were multiple agents who cracked the case, you'd have to share the money. It wasn't like, oh, everybody gets $1,000. No, there's $1,000. You just got to share it with everybody. You know, so it's like, no, I'm not going to tell Jimmy and Joe about what I know, because I want $1,000 for me.
Yeah.
And that kind of compartmentalization and seclusion translates to how field offices work. And one field office wouldn't share with another. And it's very clear in the D.B. Cooper case. Las Vegas agents traveled to Reno to do the evidence retrieval of 305 when 305 landed in Reno for the refueling. They took all the evidence home to Las Vegas.
This is what I hear.
And they didn't give it to Seattle. Okay. And the cigarette butts, they're missing because of Las Vegas.
Well, no, we just heard this weekend, or at least I just heard for the first time, that the butts were actually officially destroyed by the FBI. Where I had heard before, they simply had lost them. Las Vegas said they didn't know, and
Eric is the one who stated from the stage at the conference is that he has conclusive proof from what we call 302s, which are the federal field reports, which we use as a slang term to refer to any federal document that's being released in the Cooper case now. So it could be a letter, it could be a memo, it could be something that they Xeroxed out of something, you know, like a newspaper article. We just call them 302s.
Yeah.
And Eric says that he's seen it and has it. I've never seen it and he's never showed it to me. The 302 that I've seen is a letter from the FBI's National Crime Lab to the Las Vegas FBI office, returning the cigarette butts, saying, we have examined these cigarette butts. We have determined there is no additional evidentiary value to them, and they may be destroyed. It was a conditional statement giving Las Vegas the opportunity to destroy them if they wanted or not. That's what I've read.
Okay.
We also have a public statement from Larry Carr in 2007 on the Drop Zone chat room where he says that the cigarette butts were processed in 2003 and were lost in transit back to Las Vegas.
Now, that's the statement. That's the last statement that I ever heard. Yeah, and so it sounds to me like maybe Eric is reading a little bit too much into that 302 you were talking about. They said they may be destroyed. Probably they didn't destroy them. They just lost them or threw them out.
Or took them home as a souvenir.
That's a pretty lame souvenir, but yeah, why not? Yeah. I would actually make myself a little piece of ashtray art. I would glue them into an ashtray and glue the ashtray to my walls.
Get a 727 ashtray.
Oh, that's awesome. I would get a whole 727 seat with a little built-in ashtray and have cigarette butts sticking out of it.
You're weird, Joe. All right, one last question for you. Sure. Is D.B. Cooper alive or dead right now?
If I had to make a bet, the answer is I don't know.
Yeah.
But if I had to make a bet, I would say he's alive.
Okay, I'll go for that.
Awesome.
I'm going to agree with Bruce on this one. I think that if he had actually died, I think a letter would have been released by his lawyer with a confession. And so I think that when Cooper does die, we probably will find out who he was. One last question for Bruce, though. The YouTube guy, was it Dan Dryden?
Dan Grider.
Okay, Dan Grider. We heard just this afternoon, Dan Grider swore categorically he was going to crack D.B. Cooper wide open.
He's been saying that
in about
years.
A week. I know.
I know. He's been saying that for...
So you're skeptical then, I think?
Yeah. The question is Dan Grider the biggest bullshit artist that we met today? Or just one of many?
Yeah.
You know, and in a couple of days, I think he's going to be crowned as king of the bullshit artists.
Okay. All right. Okay. That sounds fair. We'll see it in a couple of days.
But if he's right, I promise Dan, if he is right, publicly acknowledge that he's right and I was wrong to mock him.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. That's fair.
Yeah.
The shocking details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter @shockingdetails. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.